Hey everybody, this is B. Jermyn, aka The Terrible Australian, and welcome to the 132nd episode of Super Podcast. I hope you're all doing very well today. Unfortunately, my regular co-host Super Marcy won't be joining us today, but for good reason though, because at the time of this recording, it's actually Marcy's birthday. So we all here on the Super Podcast would like to wish Marcy a happy birthday and hope she enjoys every single minute of it. Because I know that she's just having an absolute ball right now. So happy birthday, Marcy. Woo! And I'm sending you Kurt and Wyatt Russell in the mail to you as we speak. So hopefully they'll be there by sometime this afternoon. So, and you can do with them as you wish. Okay, that was creepy. But anyways, but even though Marcy is unable to join me today for this episode, I am joined by two very special guests who will take her place as my co-hosts on today's show. And that, of course, is Miss B. Harper and Mr. James Orell. How are you going, guys?
Howdy, howdy.
And how are you,
doing?
Oh, not too bad. And how you both been doing today?
I'm fantastic. I tried to send Marcy Seth Rollins, but his python wouldn't fit in the box. She'll know what I mean by that.
Oh, yeah. Marcy wanted me to tell you, James, while we're recording, because she wants me to come on yours and hers spin-off wrestling show, but I have to go
really?
On. Yeah, she wants me to go on as B Dallas. So, because
setting
I want you
up to be even more terrible than you already are.
Because,
realize that.
Yeah, just remember, James, you got to believe. Just
oh, God.
And how have you been going, B?
Oh, I've been doing quite well. Yes, it has been a bit of a busy past couple of weeks here over at the Bee Ranch, but I'm still alive, I'm still kicking, and I'm on this podcast. Yes.
I hope so, because I was completely and utterly terrified when I saw you when you post that picture of your pink gun.
Well, to be fair, that wasn't exactly my gun.
I was going to say, like, I don't know whether to be terrified or be cuted out by that gun.
I know. I do love confusing people.
Of course. but at the same time, we must be wary of you as well. So just to be on the safe side, because
Cthulhu demands nothing less.
Exactly. But before we get into our episode today, does anybody have a question for me?
Oh, okay, yeah, okay, I'll take this one. Sorry, I'm not used to it. I mean, well, all Americans are terrible in their own way, but Bede, how have you been a terrible Australian today?
Alrighty, I'm a terrible Australian because I have seen the Stepfather remake. So
I've seen worse.
Disgusting! Disgraceful, pathetic, and weak. How dare you? Please tell us.
I was expecting that reaction, to be honest. I have to be honest, and I'm not, and I know I'm going to sound even more terrible than I already am when I say this. Before I even watch the remake, I still have not even seen the original.
You son of a bitch.
Maybe for good reason, though, because I know for a fact that when I eventually get around to watching the original, I know it'll be 10 times better than this piece of crap. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah. Although it's kind of makes me laugh, though, because basically Amber Heard's in it. She basically spends most of 85% of that movie in a bikini. So
yeah, that's why it's watchable.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who doesn't? I mean, I'm not complaining. but everything else about the movie, though, is just like kind of dull. That's pretty. I'm not going to say it's like the worst remake ever, but it's just dull. It doesn't really sort of bring anything new to the table that we haven't seen many times before. But I will say this though: after watching it, it did make me more determined to go out and finally check out the original, which I'll have to very soon. So I should have put it on my Halloween viewing list this year, but I totally forgot. But hopefully I'll see it very soon. But Yeah, the Stepford, I mean, why do I keep saying Stepford? The Stepfather remake, definitely not worth it at all. So, but moving right along, we have a pretty awesome topic tonight. We've kind of done this topic before in previous years around, you know, October, and this will be the third edition of this topic, and that which, and for all those out there not sure what it is, the topic we'll be discussing is, why haven't you seen these horror films? Now, the sort of the basis of this topic is basically, you know, usually around this time of the year with Halloween and all that, usually everyone watches a lot of horror films. I watch a lot of horror films, and I assume you both watch tons of horror films as well. And most of the time, people kind of, you know, you kind of pick up the usual suspects, you know, like Halloween or the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Nightmare on Elm Street, Sex in the City 2, you know, all these kind of horror films that both terrify audiences and, but,
well, I wouldn't say Sex in the City 2 terrified me. It just, like, disgusted me. There's a difference.
But to be fair, horror films can disgust people as well, so I'm saying. I was actually waiting for that for last week.
I was just thinking, if I want to get my balls chopped off, I could think of less painful ways than that.
Oh. I guess that joke kind of fell for me. I used it before, so yeah, I'm rehashing old stuff. But anyway, so, but also, you know, like I said, the usual suspects, but I figured for this topic, we kind of do, I guess, recommend horror films that we believe that a lot of people haven't seen. Usually they can be something like, sort of like indie horror films or foreign horror films or ones that kind of sort of slipped under the radar, or ones that were kind of big at the time when they were released, but then kind of sort of forgotten about pretty quickly. But we kind of feel as though everyone should check them out, or more people should check them out. So we have our list prepared, and I think, and hopefully our suggestions will give a lot of our listeners out there even more stuff to check out with Halloween approaching in a few days. So I'm going to start with B, which is the very first horror film that you believe that nobody else has seen, but everyone should check out.
All right. Well, I have to confess something. When I was invited to come onto this podcast, well, obviously I was more than thrilled, but when it comes to making a list of films, I'm always at a loss because I'm not really a list maker because my name isn't Schindler. But when it comes to horror movies, that was terrible. That was terrible. I am going to hell.
That was worse than the Stepfather remake.
That is like something I would have said.
Wow. There's a special circle of hell with your name on it. It's right in Satan's butthole.
Oh, Satan trusts me. We have that sort of relationship. Okay.
I'm definitely leaving this in the podcast and having it.
Okay. Well, in addition to that, when it comes to films, be it horror or anything else, you never know who's seen what. You know, and when it comes to doing recommendations, you're not quite sure as to whether or not who has seen this or who has seen that. But in saying that, I just wanted to offer up my three suggestions, and I'll reveal them as we go along. So I'm going to go for something funny, something silent, and something vengeful. And right now, I'm going to go for something funny.
Yep.
And that is Housebound by Gerard Johnstone.
Hells yeah.
That is a damn good movie. And I actually got the recommendation from another friend of mine who works at Wolf in a Gorilla Suit that I also work on. And it's a New Zealand horror/comedy film. What it basically involves, and I'm not going to give away too much of the plot because, let's face it, this is a movie that you really do need to see to fully appreciate. A woman has been convicted of committing a crime, and she's been placed under house arrest in the old house that her parents live. And it soon comes to her attention that there is possibly a vengeful spirit living in the walls. This film was a huge surprise to me. New Zealand is no stranger to giving us some really great horror films. And, you know, What We Do in the Shadows and Brain Dead, you know, basically anything by Peter Jackson back in his, you know, horror days. But What I really like about Housebound, apart from every other value that it has, is the main characters, specifically the lead female character, as well as her mother. It's not often you get yourself a sincerely great horror movie that's also funny with two female leads. And you really do believe that these two women are related. The actress who plays the mother is such a delight. She has this innate ability to just like prattle on and on, tell all these stories and stuff. And everything in this movie comes to a head. There is a reason for everything you see and hear inside of it. Also, it's just so fucking hilarious. It's one of those movies that can make you sort of tense up one moment and then just burst out laughing the next. And believe it or not, horror comedies are so difficult to nail down. You're working at two extremes on the spectrum, you see. So more often than not, you will get films that have the most honorable of intentions, but sometimes they will fall flat. Housebound does not do that because it keeps a balancing act going from the great story and the writing, the physical comedy, the scares, and, of course, the acting. So I take it you guys have seen Housebound?
Oh, definitely. I saw it.
Yes, I have.
I think I saw it at the... at the 2014 Melbourne International Film Festival, and the director was there doing a Q&A and whatnot, and I didn't know what to expect. Like, I was looking through the guides and, you know, trying to figure out what movies to watch, and this title, Housebound, sort of stuck out to me, and I thought, okay, so I sort of read up on it a bit and said it's like a sort of a haunted house film, but kind of a deconstruction in a way of the genre, and I thought, okay, and it wasn't one that I had on my list for that year, but I thought, okay, I'll give it a shot. So I went to the film and I was kind of found it a huge surprise. I absolutely loved it. I thought it had some great sort of twists and turns within the story, but also it was absolutely hilarious and also creepy at the same time. And it's usually pretty hard to find that sort of balance between horror and comedy because, you know, you want to make the audience laugh, but at the same time, you want to creep them out as well. And the film just does a perfect balance of that. And there are some twists and turns you won't see coming, and also some great gags as well. And there's one gag in particular, which I won't spoil, but it has something to do with a knife, which when that scene happened, the audience I was watching it with, and as well as myself, we were all pissing ourselves laughing because, and it's so simple, but it was so hilarious. And I'm thinking to myself, why on earth hasn't anyone actually thought up a joke like that before? Like, it's just so brilliantly done. It's just a really great film and just really great performance as well. And, you know, New Zealand knows how to make really good horror comedies. Like
they sure as hell do.
Like the ones you listed there, B, and a few others as well. They just, yeah, they sort of know how to sort of find that balance. And I agree, Housebound's just a fantastic film.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd have to 100% agree with that. And I'm always on the lookout for something new, different. I love different international flavors because, like, different countries, you can get a totally different vibe. They sort of relate. Like, all the movies you listed, I mean, those are very much New Zealand movies to me. I mean, there's just a style there that just, when I see them, I'm like, oh, that's where that's from. Same with, like, Japan or Sweden. It just stands out to me.
Of course. And James, what is your first pick?
My first pick happens to be my favorite movie from 2015.
Ooh.
And I guarantee very few people have actually seen it yet. That movie is entitled Run by Jason Hoover. Now, you see, I am friends with Jason Hoover and Brian Williams, who's also – Brian Williams happens to be the star of the movie and a filmmaker in his own right. This movie, it's not just the movie itself, the entire story behind it, which just makes it such a totally unique experience. The movie was crowdfunded as basically they filmed it during a road trip from Indianapolis, Indiana to Los Angeles, California. Finding locations to film on the way there and creating the script as they go. What it's about is about a man, played by Brian, who his girlfriend leaves him. And when I say leaves him, I mean leaves him. The only thing he's got left is a coffee can with a bunch of quarters in it. That's it. So he sets off to find her. And during the process of it, I don't want to give away too much, but most of the movie, it takes place, the dialogue takes place inside his own head, where he's basically talking himself into an insane rage the further he goes. And it's just, it's brilliantly well done. It's shot in a manner that really you would think was done on such a much higher budget, and shows all sorts of just beautiful locales across America. But what sets this movie over the top, for me at least, is that once they were done with it, recording it and everything, filming it, both Brian and Jason decided they wanted to edit the movie. So they shared the footage, and they came up with two cuts of it simultaneously, which is how they always play it. They never show one cut or the other, and both have a totally different tone from one another, whereas Jason Hoover's is more somber and melancholy, and you feel sad for the guy. Brian's is more manic, and just, it just, you can see the rage building in him in that cut so much better. And it also, and this is just me personally plugging and saying I'm proud of, I'm actually quoted on the DVD cover.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
It's a fantastic movie, and if you get the chance, you should not pass it up to see that movie.
Yeah, I know you've talked about this movie before, because you've mentioned it on your Facebook and from the sounds of it, it does sound really interesting. And I think the idea of having sort of two different cuts of the one film, that to me is kind of a fascinating way of viewing a film, because, I mean, and to me, just the idea of, you know, editing something, like having two different people edit the same movie, and having, even though it's all the same footage and the same and whatnot, it's just how you sort of approach it and what kind of tone you can make from it. And I think that's a really interesting way of sort of creating a film like that. And you were saying that your name's on the DVD cover. Is the are both cuts on the DVD, or are they planning on putting them?
They each have a separate DVD, which you can buy actually together from either one of their film companies for $20 American.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, which isn't bad. And in fact, I've got another way that you can see it for free.
Yep.
But I'll tell you about that later on tonight.
Okay, cool.
And I also want to say about what you're talking about. Yeah, both cuts, they're like, it's the same footage, but it feels like different films in ways. I mean, they even use different music for it and everything. And the first couple of times I saw it was with an audience, and both times it got a standing ovation to a packed house. I mean, they literally had to bring in more seats just to get everyone in there. It was a hell of an experience.
Awesome. And what about you, cool, babe? What do you think of
Jerry Went? It's your turn, man.
No, man, I was saying, like, B's thoughts on your film.
sorry, my bad.
Well, James, you're absolutely right. I have not seen it, but given I am a friend of yours and I see your Facebook wall quite regularly, I have followed your progress on the film. But hearing you speaking about it in more in-depth detail, given these guys are editing this film two different ways, that must take a phenomenal amount of trust to do. But given both cuts had earned a standing ovation from an audience, like, I don't doubt that there is something very, very special about this movie. Especially also when you are able to elicit two very distinctive and very, very different notions from the film. Like, as you said, one is full of manic rage that's just like coming to the boiling point. On the other hand, it's like it's not quite as manic. Like, I can't imagine a film being so diametrically different, even though it's like the same cuts and the same footage, but just with a different music. That is definitely very, very fascinating to me. So I cannot wait to see this, especially now that you've given it such a glowing recommendation.
Oh, I cannot recommend it enough. Like I said, it's my favorite film of the year. And honestly, as much as it is a psychological horror, if you will, it's just as much an art film as opposed to that. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful, and it makes you think. This is one of the biggest thing that I took away from it. I mean, the entire time I was just seeing exactly what they were trying to convey, and that was just fantastic, because a lot of films are a lot more straight out, and, you know, like, they tell you straight up what you're supposed to be thinking about. This one lets you see it how you want, and I find that just fantastic.
So in a sense, it's almost like a Rorschach test.
Kind of, but not quite as bloody.
Bloody.
Awesome. Oh, I thought you'd like that.
Awesome. I'll definitely have to check it out at some point in the future, because, like I say, it does sound really interesting, and I'd be very interested to check out both cuts of the film just to see how they sort of, like, compare to each other.
And to your point, B, those two, yeah, there is a lot of trust with them. Me and all my Days of the Dead friends, from Dust Till Con friends, we like to say that they're married to each other because they kind of... they are like that. They are that close to each other. They're always around each other, and they're great guys. And you wouldn't. The one drawback I will say about it, which actually kind of helps it be a strength, is the fact that Brian's not an actor.
Ooh.
Not by any means. He's a director, an editor, sure, but this was his first time really acting in anything. And on one hand, yeah, I mean, his delivery could be a bit better, but at the same time, there's just kind of a purity to it because he's not an actor, which makes it feel more, I guess you'd say, realistic as to how he's approaching his emotions and how he's gradually losing his mind.
So basically, it would be like what any of us would be feeling, like very sort of naturalistic.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. And I think while most people would view that as a flaw, I think it's one of the film's hidden strengths, to be honest with you. And there's a beautiful shot, I've got to say, and they were totally not intending this, but there's a shot of him looking at the Hollywood sign in Los Angeles. And he turns around and he's wearing a Night of the Living Dead t-shirt. And anyone that knows George Romero knows how just anti-Hollywood and how anti-establishment that guy
that is.
That's
clever. That's clever.
Yeah, they totally did not intend that, but it just works, like, on that level. It's a happy accident.
Awesome. I guess we'll go to my first pick. My pick for this podcast is a film that actually you can watch on Netflix right now, because I think it did premiere on Netflix, I think about probably a few months ago. So you can go check this out right after the podcast if you're interested. But it's actually a film I actually saw at the Melbourne International Film Festival last year, and that was a film called Creep. Now, Creep is sort of a found footage horror film, and it's directed by Patrick Bryce, who actually stars in the film as well. And it also stars Mark Duplass, who was also the producer on it. And the film's about this guy named Aaron, who's sort of a video photographer, and then he finds an ad on Craigslist from this guy named Joseph, played by Mark Duplass, who wants somebody to sort of help him sort of make a video for his son, because in the film, Joseph is dying and his son's about to be born, and he feels as though he's not going to be able to live long enough to see his son be born. So he hires Aaron to make him, like, help him shoot a video so that he can make it for his son. But that's just the very beginning of the film, and as the film progresses along, it becomes much more stranger and much more creepier, and I'm not going to sort of spoil what happens, but it's definitely a film that it's really well done in a lot of ways, because it is actually pretty creepy, as you would expect from the title Creep, because there are things in the film that did actually put kind of sort of creeped me out. But at the same time, though, it's a film that is also surprisingly funny as well. So it is a horror comedy in a lot of ways, but it does find that sort of good balance between having the sort of the creepy horror, but also having this kind of sort of cringeworthy kind of awkward sort of comedy. And especially because the comedy aspect sort of works more in the first half, and then sort of the horror aspect sort of comes into the second half. And it's a pretty well done film, and it was also a very low budget as well, but it's so effectively done, and it's well directed. And but to me, what sort of really made this film for me, of course, was Mark Duplass in the role of Joseph. He is terrific. Like, he sort of finds that balance of being sort of very sympathetic, but also very creepy as well. And it's a film that I was kind of, I found also really entertaining as well. So it is on Netflix right now. So if you want to go check it out, I'd say it's worth a watch. And it's just a fun, creepy, and very funny little horror film. And I don't know if either you two have seen it, but I'd definitely say it's worth checking out if you haven't.
Okay. No, I haven't, but I have seen it on listed on Netflix. I just haven't had the chance to get around to it yet. And the description that you've been saying and everything, yeah, it sounds right up my alley.
And what about you, babe?
Well, since you say Netflix, I'm thinking, yes! So, given your glowing recommendation, that actually gives me far more motivation to do so. And just judging from the very sort of vague synopsis you gave, it sounds a little like a horror version of My Life with Michael Keaton and Nicole Kidman.
Oh my God, I didn't even think of that. It does!
That may be the most amazing thing I've ever heard be. So
thank you.
I'm not going to get that image out of my head now. So,
well, also, here's the thing. I'm not one of those people who will immediately decry a found footage film. Look, we've had hits and misses. I'm not about to dispute that. But I'm not somebody who will always say, ooh, found footage every time a new one comes out.
Exactly. If you do that, you'd miss out on a gem like, say, Troll Hunter.
Exactly. So, you know, always keep your options open. But from the sounds of Creep, this definitely sounds like a lot of fun. And yeah, by the time this podcast is done, yep, I'm going to go right into Netflix and, well, probably not chill, but I'm still going to watch the movie.
That'd be awesome. I'll be looking forward to hear what you think of it. I saw it with a crowd as well, because my crowd that I saw it with was really into it as well. I'm not sure how it would play on your own, but I'd be definitely interested to hear what you make of it once you do, B. So you have to let me know after you do.
Oh, I will. Don't worry.
Oh, cool. B, what is your second pick?
Okay, so my second pick is my silent pick, and that would be Le Inferno. Le Inferno was made in 1911, and if I'm not mistaken, it took 4 years to go into production. And what it basically is, it's a very loose retelling of Dante Alighieri's Inferno. Basically, it involves Dante going in through the nine circles of hell, seeing all the sinners being punished and all these disgusting demons punishing them. It's a very visually rich film. Silent films are one of my favorite things because, you know, back in those days, you didn't have the benefit of sound or computers or any of the embellishments that we take for granted these days. And when it comes for an audience to use their imagination and whatnot, there's just something so magical about watching a silent movie. It almost makes me wonder what it would be like to go back into, you know, that era when cinema was just in its barest infancy, and you're seeing this stuff for the first time. You are seeing like full motion on the big screen and is telling you this larger than life story of going through hell and meeting Satan himself. That's like a huge, huge thing. And it has three directors, and I'm probably going to screw this up. You have Francesco Bertolini, Adolfo Padovan, and Giuseppe Lugoro. And these three guys were just so ambitious in their techniques and their filmmaking. There are so many memorable sequences in this movie. And, yeah, it's just so visually rich and astounding. And it's kind of horrifying, too, because this is, well, granted, you still had censorship and that sort of stuff, but this was made in Europe, right? And Europe was far more, liberal when it came to this sort of stuff. So you could see naked human bodies being ripped on the big screen. You could see torture happening. You could see people being consumed by the flames of hell and being eaten by Satan. It's just it is an experience. Have you guys seen it?
I haven't seen it, but I know one thing, though. I remember reading this article a while back of, how silent horror films are probably more disturbing and terrifying than modern-day ones. And just looking at the images at a lot of them, I'm thinking, how on earth did they get away with stuff back then? And I don't know if this film was part of them, but there was just a lot of really creepy stuff. But I always really liked silent horror films. I haven't seen as much as I would love to. I've kind of only seen, sort of the more famous kind of ones, like Nosferatu and Dr. Caligari and stuff like that. But I definitely need a bit more schooling in silent horror films. But this one does sound very interesting, though.
I am a fan of silent horror, silent films in general. I agree with everything about how they have to emote better with their physical acting as opposed to just saying the words and everything. I have not seen this, but it's not been through a lack of trying. I've heard about this long ago, just never found it. And the fact that they could pull off something that epic back then is just astounding to me. And to your point of why they could get so graphic or anything like that, yeah, remember the silent film era was well before there was anything sort of like the MPAA.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
There was no standards and practices back then. It was pretty much whatever the hell you wanted goes.
Yeah. And when it comes to basically what could be construed, if you like, a story about, the name and hell and blasphemy, religion isn't taken very lightly even today. So you really have to wonder just how much these guys were risking when they made this movie and showing you all this stuff. But also, James, you can actually find Le Inferno on YouTube in full.
Oh,
cool.
Mm-hmm. Wow, okay, cool. I'll have to check that out tonight.
Awesome.
While you're checking out Creep.
So there you go. It all, we got a swap right here, so that's awesome. Yeah, I'll have to definitely check it out as well. I know a lot of sort of silent films are on YouTube, but you'll definitely have to give me a list of ones I need to check out, especially of the horror variety, because those ones are just pretty awesome. At least the ones I've seen so far. So,
Modern Prometheus is one I would recommend.
Awesome. James, what is your second pick?
Well, my second pick, I went with something a little bit less esoteric and artsy and more just straight up brutal. I went with the film Animal. You can actually watch this on Netflix Instant right now as well. What this is it's a good old-fashioned creature feature. It's a fairly low budget, but at the same time, it looks really well done. All the special effects are practical effects, so you don't have to worry about some lame-ass CGI crap. But it's a bunch of kids going hiking in the woods, and one by one, they start getting picked off by this creature, which the best way I can describe it is its jaw looked like it could bite your heart out through your sternum. I mean, it's just brutal how this thing looks and how it attacks them. And it's unlike any other creature I've seen in one of these type of movies before. It also happens to be written by Tommy Houston, who is the guy behind the big swath of recent horror documentaries, such as More Brains, The Return to the Living Dead, Never Sleep Again, Crystal Lake Memories, His Name Was Jason. Same guy behind that wrote this. And the cast is all a bunch of really much unknowns for the most part. I mean, the biggest name I can name in it is Joey Lauren Adams, and she's not even the main character. And it's just a good old-fashioned monster movie.
Also, I know of this one because I've heard about it, but also, wasn't Drew Barrymore an executive producer on it?
Yes, actually, she was. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, she was, in fact. Looking at the DVD right now.
Awesome.
And it was really well done. I mean, for just a simple monster flick that just hits that note, you can do much worse. I mean, it's only like 86 minutes long. So, I mean, it just goes at a brisk pace and just doesn't bother with anything unnecessary. It just trims the fat and just goes for the meat.
Awesome.
You like what I did there for a creature feature that eats?
I do love a good monster movie, though, and I'll definitely have to check this one out at some point, too, because I have heard good things about it, so. But I definitely even more now after hearing you hear talk about it.
It's definitely a fun one. I highly recommend it.
Cool. And what about you, B? Would you be interested to check out Animal?
I put it on my list.
Hell yeah.
I do adore creature features. There's nothing like the stunning simplicity of watching this mutated motherfucker eat hapless people. So even by default, I think this one will be a fun little time.
Awesome.
It is, and one of the beauties of it is they never bother to explain just what the hell this creature is. It's just that it's mean as fuck.
Well, you know, you could easily say that about, you know, Michael Myers. He wasn't given a reason. He just went around and killed people, and that still made him terrifying.
Exactly.
That's true. And you can even, to go back to an earlier point on yours, is you can use someone like Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees as a modern day representation of the silent film era, since they have to act without saying a word and all through body language.
Well, you still had Michael and Jason heavy breathing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Although you would have subtitle, like in silent films, they have like the little view cards with the dialogue.
With the asterisks.
With the asterisks, it'll just have breathing under.
Heavy breathing. I want to see that now.
I want to see. I want somebody to make a silent film slasher film. That'd be awesome.
Oh my god, yes! Hell yes!
I'm just brainstorming it right now. We have to make this movie now.
the
silent slash.
Oh man, the audience would be wrecked if that happened. That'd be amazing.
In modern age with cell phones and everything like that.
No, it has to be done period style. That's the only way it could work.
Well,
I don't know. I don't want to see it with the cell phones and everything like that. Now I'm thinking about it.
Oh, we could probably do like parallel stories or something. One in the modern day and one like in the past. But it has to
be a
silent film with like the pianos and everything. That'd be awesome. Hey. And the killer has to look like Charlie Chaplin. So
there's an example of how I know that this could work. The episode Hush from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah. That's one of the best episodes of television, period. Much less proof of silent film in modern day, how well it could work.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll have to brainstorm this idea after the show. But moving right along, though, we'll go to my second pick. And this is one I actually saw from my Halloween viewing list. I think might have been 3 years ago. And it was a film that I heard good things about, and I thought I'd check it out. And after watching it, I thought it was pretty terrific. And it's a film called Lovely Molly. Has anyone seen this movie?
Oh, yes, I have.
I have not.
It's the film Lovely Molly. It's about a young girl who named Molly, who kind of has had a sort of a dark past because she sort of suffered tragedy in her life and whatnot, and she sort of fell into drugs and alcohol and whatnot. But at the very beginning of the film, she's all clean and everything, and she's just recently married her new husband, Tom. And so after the wedding, they decide to move back into Molly's dead parents' house in the country. So once they sort of move back there and Tom sort of goes off to work and whatnot, and Molly sort of is at the house sort of trying to, you know, get sort of work on the house and whatnot, really strange and really dark things begin to happen. And what I wasn't sure what to expect from this film. Like, it is like it does have a little slight sort of found footage element to it, but it only plays a kind of a small part of it as well. But it's kind of, in a way, more of a sort of a psychological horror film, because as sort of Molly is on her own and dealing with her past, being back at her old home and the loss of her parents and, you know, and the darker aspects of her life, it sort of starts to affect her psychologically. And the things that sort of happen as the film goes along, you're not exactly sure what is real and what's not. And also there's sort of a monster comes into play as well. And but the film sort of finds that sort of really interesting balance of just playing in the psychological aspects of the character. Like I say, you're not exactly sure whether everything you're seeing is real or if it's all just in her head. And the film sort of keeps on playing that right up to the right from the start to the very beginning. And it sort of gives you a film that sort of gives you some more questions than answers. And also there's a shot in this film that's without a doubt one of the creepiest shots I have ever seen in a horror film. It actually did make one of my previous like 50 greatest horror shots list, but I recommend not to check one of those out until after you see the movie, because it is kind of a spoiler. But it's a really great film. And also the lead actress who plays Molly, Gretchen Lodge, she is terrific. Like, it's a really great performance from her. And the film is actually co-written and directed by Eduardo Sanchez, who was one of the directors behind the Blair Witch Project. So it's a film that sort of deals with that sort of psychological aspect. And it's just a really great film. And it's definitely, I think, it's just that, I mean, as a solo, this, I've seen a lot of Eduardo Sanchez's sort of solo work post, like, The Blair Witch, but to me, Lovely Molly is definitely without a doubt his best film as a solo director. It is a great film, and it's one that I highly recommend, not just you two, but also all our listeners to check out. It's just pretty terrific.
Cool. Sounds right up my alley. I'm a big fan of the psychological stuff. I love gore as much as the next guy, but I mean, the true horror to me takes place in your head. And those sorts of questions of what you're seeing, whether you're questioning whether it's real or not, to me, that's what's really the scariest shit of all. I mean, I guess it goes back to my love of H.P. Lovecraft and his basic themes of, and Clive Barker does this a lot too, but the worst hell you can be in is inside your head.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think the film really sort of captures that, because you kind of get that sort of paranoid feeling. And yeah, I think it really also hinges on Gretchen Lodge's performance as well, because she really brings a lot of sympathy to her character. So we feel scared for her, and we're also just as confused with her about what's going on with everything around us. So I think she's a really big deal for how this film worked for me. But even then, like, the actual film itself is just pretty well crafted. And I think it's just one, it's a must see for all horror fans out there if you haven't seen it. And I know definitely for a fact that B definitely has it on her list now to check out.
Oh, I actually have checked it out in the past.
Okay.
I agree with everything you said. I agree with everything both of you have said. When it comes to true horror, like, the most horrific stuff is conjured in our own brains. That is where the most worst case scenarios always come from. And that's where all the greatest horror stories and movies have come from. It's come from the mind of a person or a bunch of people. And also, given Molly has had a past when it comes to drug addiction and how this plays so heavily into her downward spiral in this movie, like, she's never sure as to whether or not this is just something, you know, that's happening normally, or maybe it is some sort of regressive drug withdrawal that's going on. And she is being tortured in ways that, you know, no human being should have to endure. And given Gretchen Lodge's performance, that the woman is stellar. She is able to convey so many emotions, like, through her eyes and her body and her delivery. She is a consummate actress. And when it comes to psychological thrillers, you absolutely need a firm and, like, commanding presence. You need somebody with talent to really get behind and feel sympathy for. You want to help Molly. You don't want her to succumb to this terrible thing that she's going through. And, you know, having a sense of sympathy and grounding with a character, that is what makes it so damn memorable, and that is what makes you so invested in the movie and the character's journey.
I agree, and it's... I think it is on Netflix now. I know it is on Netflix Australia, because I saw it the other day when I was going through the horror section of Netflix. So for our Australian listeners, it's up there right now for you all to check out. I assume it will be. It's also on the US version. So just check it out. It's just definitely worth it for sure. B, what is your third pick?
My third and final pick is my vengeful pick.
Ooh.
And that is I Saw the Devil.
Hell
by
yeah.
Kim Ji Woo. Hell yeah. Look, I love Korean cinema. They have such a rich and diverse genre. And that's not to discount international film in general. But a lot of the films that I have seen in the past, be it horror, action, romance, most of them come from there, and I Saw the Devil is just, it really puts you on edge. So once again, very, very basic plot thing. You have a serial killer who kills the wife of a special ops agent, and the killer doesn't know that the guy is a special ops agent, and the special ops agent is like, get fucking running, son. It is an all-out adrenaline ride. Now, I am firmly of the belief that horror and thriller go hand in hand. Even though you can make the most gory sorts of movie, like gory films, just like, you know, anything with just blood and guts for no apparent reason, it can sort of evoke a sense of disgust. But when it comes to a thriller element that adds in that sense of intensity and being put on the edge, and this film really kind of makes you wonder as to who's the good guy here. Even though you have this serial killer, you know, and he does a very terrible thing, you have this guy who is just as bad as he is. And it's one of those typical revenge fantasies of which, you know, all stops are out. And even though you may have a hero, he does some pretty fucking dirty stuff. And you know what? It actually reminds me of Sheriff Wydell from The Devil's Rejects.
Yeah.
Just in the way that he just goes so damn far. And even though you keep telling yourself, you know, it's warranted, the serial killer fucking deserves it, there just comes a time which, you know, who's really the devil here? Who is really the most violent individual that you can think of? And it turns out you really cannot tell. It's well filmed. It has you on the edge of your seat. It has you biting your fingernails and your knuckles getting really, really white. And I am just so in admiration of this movie. I love how the sense of ambiguity tests you. It's just so fucking cool.
It's just awesome. That's pretty much all you need to say about I Saw the Devil. And I think when I first, like, I'm a big fan of Ji-Woon Kim. I think he's a fantastic director. Tale of Two Sisters, A Bittersweet Life, this film, even his recent US film, Last Stand, are just just all fantastic. Yeah. And also The Good, the Bad, the Weird. And like, he's a director that no matter what type of film he does, whether it's a horror or a thriller or action or a western, he brings sort of a real freshness to it, and sort of that makes it feel unique, and also sort of does interesting things with its plot and sort of with its characters. And I agree, V, that I love the sort of that sort of thin line between sort of the characters. Like, even though, yeah, this cop character, who in the film played by Byung Lee, I believe, we know him as the good guy because his like wife is brutally murdered at the beginning of the film, but over the course of the film, it's like he does just these equally terrible things, just like the serial killer, and you're sort of wondering, should I be rooting for this guy or not? And even the film in a way even brings sort of empathy to the serial killer character. So the movie kind of messes you up in that regard when it comes to the complexity of the characters. But I think that's just the brilliance of Ji-Won Kim. And also they're just great, intense sequences, and the action scenes in it are just phenomenal. And it just looks spectacular as well.
I absolutely agree. I think that movie is just, it's just pure and simple, a masterpiece of filmmaking. I've said before on this podcast that I think there's two basic styles of horror. There's shock and there's suspense. And this is one of those rare movies that really just marries the two of them together. I mean, the violence hits hard and it's just brutal to watch. But at the same time, it keeps you wondering what the hell is coming next. And I think your comparison to Sheriff Wydell in The Devil's Rejects is one of the most apt comparisons I've heard for the character. That's another movie where just, yeah, who's really the worst one in this movie? I mean, when you start feeling sorry for someone as vile as the villain in this movie, that says a lot. And it also says a lot to the acting talents for everyone involved.
It's just awesome. I think pretty much we've all summed it up. Like, it's what I first heard about I was really taken by the title. Like, I saw the devil. Like, I mean, when you hear the title like that, that sort of immediately grabs your attention. And it's also kind of, you know, kind of the question of the film as well. Like, it's like, even though I've only ever seen the film once, and I do own the Blu-ray, and I plan on watching it again very soon, it's just an amazing film, and it just proves that, once again, South Korea just there are amazing films coming out of South Korea over the past probably 10, 15 years, and everyone is just fantastic.
Oh yeah, and the actor who plays the serial killer, he was the lead in Old Boy.
I know.
And those portrayals are just so damn different. In Old Boy, he is like very sympathetic as well as pathetic, but at the same time, you still feel incredibly, you know, empathic towards him. And in this movie, he plays a serial killer. He's a brutal son of a bitch, but when Byung Lee's character starts to like really fucking bows on him, you're like, oh god, why am I feeling sorry for this guy? Stop it.
Yeah, it's
absolutely
awesome film. I highly recommend it as well. James, what is your third and final pick?
All right, I want to say right now that I have some honorable mentions after this, but my third one comes from good friend and just great horror guy, John Fallon. His movie, The Shelter.
Ooh, this is one I've been wanting to check out because I, when they did their Indiegogo campaign, I did contribute to the film. So I look forward to checking this film out once it's, whether it's in a film festival or on DVD or something, I look forward to seeing this one.
Oh, fantastic. Have you seen it, B?
B? Hello?
Hello?
B? B?
Huh.
That's weird. She's vanished. She's still online.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Sorry about that. Yes, I have seen The Shelter. And goddamn, that thing was a labor of love for John Fallon. It really, really
absolutely
was.
Absolutely. Michael Paré, who's... I guess I'm a fan of one-person shows a lot because, well, like Run, Michael Perret is the main character, the only character for, like, 90% of the movie. But, by God, does he ever just knock it out of the park. This is the best acting job I've seen him do in a long, long time. And you can tell he... throughout it, he's tortured and everything. I'm not going to give away too much just because, well, while this is another one of those movies that's very easy to interpret your own way, and which is, I'll get into that, is one of the more brilliant things about it. At the same time, if you give away too much, you take that away from someone, I think. Would you agree with that, B?
Oh, yes, definitely. When it comes to any sort of collaborative effort, like, you gotta have, everyone's gotta get their due, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And what I love about it is he plays a man who's clearly lost in life. He's homeless, and you know something bad has happened to him. You don't exactly know what at the beginning of the film, and you do kind of come to find out later. But as the movie goes on, it gets progressively scarier and scarier. But there's an element to it that you can interpret this movie in various different ways. I mean, is it from the religious aspect? Is it all in his head because he drinks like 3 fucking bottles of whiskey by himself in the course of one night? Has he just lost his mind? Is he dead? I mean, it just throws so many possibilities out at you. And after having talked with John, it's very much was his intention for that. I mean, best director I can use to compare is David Lynch. You will see the movie how you want to see it, and it doesn't make it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said earlier, I look forward to checking it out. I'm kind of like, sort of like gritting my teeth because everyone else has seen it before me, but I really look forward to checking it out because it does seem like a horror film, or at least a sort of a psychological horror drama or something that.
Oh, it's very much a horror film.
Yeah, that it just seems exactly right up my alley in terms of my particular sort of favorite type of sort of horror films. And like, I love all different types, but there's something in particular that sort of the sort of more character driven sort of psychological stuff that I just love. And I really look forward to checking out this one for sure.
Right. And if you know anything about John Fallon from Arrow in the Head, you know what his biggest influences are, what he loves in horror movies. And well, I gotta say, he checks off every box. it's beautiful to look at. The sound design is one of the best aspects of the entire movie. I mean, that's a movie that you definitely want to have like a good surround sound set up for to get the most out of. Or if you failing that, a good pair of headphones, because the sound is very, very important to it. It makes as much of the horror and tension in that movie as anything visual, if not more so in some cases.
Awesome.
I remember in the past of when John Fallon used to give us like updates about, you know, what he was doing creatively and whatnot, that the guy obviously has a huge, huge appreciation of David Lynch movies. Most of the Lynch films that he reviewed on his site got a really high rating. That the guy has very sort of eclectic tastes. He can go for gore and everything, and then he can go for really in-depth psychological horror. And the fact that he wears these inspirations on his sleeves while at the same time, you know, owning his own sense of identity when it comes to his filmmaking process, or rather his creative process in general, it's really not often you get yourself an indie filmmaker who is able to basically take everything they know and apply it on the big screen and still put their own freshness to it. And for it to be so successful the way it is in the shelter, like this is, like I said before, this has been a huge labor of love for the director for quite some time. But you know what? It has finally paid off. All the commitment and the blood, the sweat, the tears, the frustrations, it's all come to a head and it's made this movie possible.
Absolutely. And my hat's off to him for it. I mean, honestly, you could see, you could feel every bit of that love in every single frame of the film. And working with a guy like Michael Paré, who he has touted for years as one of his favorite actors, he manages to bring out the best out of him, which helps show that not only is he a fan, but he has some genuine directing talent behind him. And he's got a very good eye with the camera as well. And honestly, I cannot wait for more people to see this film because I'm tired of holding in the goddamn spoilers because, oh man, the ending of it just it begs for a discussion.
Awesome. I'm definitely, like I said, I'm gritting my teeth in anticipation to finally checking this film out at some point. So hopefully, I know it's doing the festival circuit now, so hopefully come to one of the local ones here at some point.
It just played at Sitges, of all places. I mean, that's pretty damn huge.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty huge, especially for a first-time feature film for Mr. John Fallon. So, like I said, I'm looking forward to this one, and I definitely can't wait for sure.
Oh, you won't be disappointed.
For my third and final pick, this is a film, again, I saw from my Halloween viewing list. I think this might have been about 2 years ago, this one. And it's a film that I heard good things about, and I thought, okay, I'll check this out and see what it's like. It's a film called Excision. It is...
Oh!
It is a little... It's a horror comedy, and it's about a... to say the least, it's a film about a high school student named Pauline, played by Anna Lynn McCord, who is a very disturbed young girl, and to say the least, I'm going to be using that a lot for this part of the review. She is a young girl who kind of lives with her family, her mum, her dad, and her younger sister, who has an illness, and she is a girl who wants to become, her main drive is she wants to become a surgeon because she finds the whole, so anything medical to be fascinating. And during the film, she has these really bizarre and really messed up, disturbing dreams that involve surgery. And they're kind of shot in this sort of almost art house kind of style. And that makes them sort of like really bizarre. And during the course of the film, it's sort of like, and it's also a coming of age story because she's trying to experience, sex and love and stuff like that. But at the same time, though, she wants most of all is kind of the approval of her mum, who in the film is wonderfully played by Tracy Lords. And as the film sort of progresses along, her delusions start to really affect her, and the film goes into a third act where it becomes absolutely disturbing. And I'm not going to say what happens, but I was really impressed by this film. And it's written and directed by Richard Bates Jr. I think this might have been his first feature-length film, because I know for a fact that the film is actually based on a short that he made, I think, probably a year or two prior before he actually made this one. And it's just so confidently made in every way, like, and it looks spectacular. It's shot in sort of widescreen, and it has a lot of color, and it's a very bright film. That was what sort of really surprised me the most. Even like in the sort of the more horrific, disturbing scenes, it's sort of shot so beautifully and elegantly, and like I said, has sort of this sort of art house kind of feel to them. And of course, a lot of blood and gore as well. So, and also the performances are great. Anna Lynn McCord, who is fantastic. like, she really dives into this character 110%, and you could tell that she's relishing playing this character. She brings sort of a lot of humor, a lot of sympathy, and also sort of in creepiness as well, and the supporting casts are great, and it's like a who's who, this cast, besides Annalyn McCord.
Absolutely. I love the fact that I don't mean to cut you off here.
No, I was just going to say.
Anytime you get John Waters in a film,
yep,
you have my attention.
Yep. And you can definitely tell he definitely was an influence on the director as well. But mm-hmm. even then, like, the supporting cast, like, besides, you know, Annalyn McCord and Tracy Lords, like you say, you got John Waters in there, Roger Bart, Malcolm Dowell, Marley Matlin, Ray Wise. Like, there are so many great actors, and everyone delivers. And also, I think Ariel Winter from Modern Family is in there as well, playing the younger sister of Pauline. And, like, everyone is great. Like, the film is really funny. It's really disturbing. And also, the very last scene is both chilling and also kind of kicks you emotionally as well. And it's just a really pleasant surprise. And, like, I wasn't sure what to expect from it. Like, I saw the cover of the DVD whenever I went into like the DVD shops around here, and I'm thinking, oh, that's a cool looking cover. So I thought I'll have to check it out at some point. And I heard good reviews, and it's just awesome. Like, it's a really good film, and I've been recommending to Marcy, because it just seems like a movie that's right up her alley, and I know she's gonna love it for sure when she gets around to see it. And to me, it's the performances that stood out to me the most. I mean, it's brilliantly directed and written, but it's the performances, and particularly Annalyn McCord and Tracy Lords, who actually won a few awards for a performance in this film. It's just a hugely entertaining, creepy, funny little horror film that if our listeners out there haven't seen, have to check out for sure. It's worth it.
Absolutely agree. I'm glad you brought that one up. I love that movie.
Yep. And what about you, B?
Well, you may call it creepy and disturbing, but I call it every single Monday. No, I completely agree.
Day in the life of B. Harper.
Yes, you know it now. I completely agree with you. Like, what the film really does rest on is the performance of the actors, especially when it comes to the relationship between McCord and Lords. It's just a really fascinating thing. And look, I have to confess something. When I saw some of the posters for the movie, like the teasers and whatnot, the first thing I thought was tits. So I thought, oh, it's going to be one of those movies. Okay. Well, much to my surprise, it is so much more than that. Like, it is just, it's so quirky and dangerous. But at the same time, it's just so much fun to watch. It's like a huge party that we're all invited to, and all these wonderful actors who are assembling on the screen, and just, you can tell in a movie when everybody's just having a really damn good time. And for better or worse, it really does influence the rest of the movie. And happily, in this case, it is such a positive, wonderful experience.
Yeah,
absolutely. I love good ensembles like that, because, I mean, you're almost guaranteed gold, unless, well, Rob Zombie's remaking Halloween again, but that's beside the point. Sorry, just had to get him.
That was a funny movie.
Not a fan of those two movies of his.
Well, I like the first one, but, you know, that's a whole different story altogether. But, you know, that's a whole different episode right there. But now, before we sort of wrap up the show, I might ask you both if you've had any honorable mentions you would like to quickly mention for our listeners to check out at Halloween.
I'll let B go first, because I'm pretty sure my list is probably a little bit longer.
Well, James, that wasn't necessarily, because I don't have any honorable mentions, unfortunately. So, James, what do you got?
All right. Well, then, I'd like to bring up Time to Kill, which is from Brian Williams, the star of Run. He directed his wife, actually, Ellie Church, in that. It's a throwback to the 1970s drive-in features where it's just supposed to be like ultra low budget, ultra shock, schlock fest. I mean, the movie starts off with a freaking coat hanger abortion, okay? So it's one of those. It's not meant to be taken seriously. And at every Days of the Dead, they try to air it during their film festival right around midnight on Saturday night as a basically the Days of the Dead version of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Right. First thing Brian does is he passes out beer to the audience. Cheap beer at that, because, well, that's what this movie deserves. And the whole time through, he's heckling it. His own movie. It's meant to look bad. It's meant to be hokey and everything like that. And that's just what makes it so brilliant and fun. Another one I'd like to bring up is my favorite film from 2014 called Pieces of Talent. This is an odd, odd film, but I just adore it more and more every time I see it. It's about this guy named David Long, played by David Long, who he's this amateur wannabe filmmaker, but what he's filming is his victims from serial killing. It's, you would think that this is a found footage. It's not. Not at all. But at the same time, the character David is so likable. I mean, he's, while he's doing these gruesome acts and horrible things to people, he's found this sweet, cute little girl who's like, well, not little girl, but young woman, whose life just has given her shit. And he latches on to her during that. And their relationship is just fascinating to me. It's a beautiful watch. It's a lot
that
of fun.
That reminds me of Peeping Tom.
It's similar. It's similar, but this one is a little bit different. I mean, it's a lower budget, I'll tell you that much. But at the same time, it all ties in together in a way which is just brilliant to me. And they're currently working on a sequel, but they're having issues with funding. And anytime anyone that gets a chance to check out Pieces of Talent, just fucking do it. Just fucking do it. You will not be disappointed. Like I said, it's my favorite film of all of 2014. And that year had fucking Guardians of the Galaxy in it. So that says a lot. And lastly, I got a little 1-2 punch I'd like to mention. It's from a filmmaker I'm a big fan of, independent horror, Scott Shermer. Found and then Headless. Found is a movie about this kid who he's in the fifth grade. As he grows up, he finds out that his older brother is a serial killer. And what Headless is in the movie Found, there's this old fake slasher movie that was created for Found called Headless, set made in the 1970s, supposedly. Yeah, he went ahead and made that as a pseudo sequel to Found, the actual movie in it. So, I mean, he got really meta with it. And again, Brian Williams and Ellie Church, they're in that one as well. Those guys just keep popping up in everything, I swear to God.
Awesome. Was there any more that you wanted to recommend, James?
Oh, well, I got plenty more, but that'll do for tonight.
Okay, cool. I do have a few things. I'm surprised you didn't mention this one, B, because you watched it, I think, the other week, and that was No One Lives, which...
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Which is about a couple played by, I believe, Luke Evans and Laura Ramsey, who are sort of on this trip, and then one night they get kidnapped by a bunch of criminals. And I'm just going to say that because what happens afterwards is pretty a lot of fun. Let's just put it that way. So, it's also has some pretty cool gore effects in that as one as well. Another one is a film I actually saw at the Melbourne International Film Festival this year. And it's a film that is coming out, I believe, in November. But they're also doing an Indigo go campaign for it so I can get a much wider release, and that's a film called He Never Died, which stars Henry Rollins as a very jaded immortal who likes to drink blood, but he sort of wants to get back on the straight and narrow, and one of the fun things he likes to do is go down and play bingo at the local church. And also then things sort of get complicated when a daughter that he never knew he had comes into his life. So it's a really good film. It's a lot of fun. Sort of mixes different type of genres. You got horror, you got comedy, you got a bit of noir in there as well, and even action. And but at the same time, it's Henry Rollins' performance that just makes the film. And it is... He's just fantastic. It's definitely one of his best performances as
Henry
an actor.
Henry Rollins is the fucking man.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, I love that guy.
I mean, if you love Henry Rollins, you got to watch this movie when it comes out. It is awesome. And, of course, one little film. Like, I've seen a lot of films, but I'm going to mention this one mainly because I can just sort of say that, yeah, I saw it before everybody else. And another film I saw at the Melbourne International Film Festival this year, and that was The Witch. Which is
yes,
phenomenal. That's all I'm going to say about it.
And I have not seen that yet.
It is. Let's just say there are things in this movie that you cannot unsee, and they kind of, to me, the best type of horror films like have moments or scenes in them that kind of burn into your memory, and we sort of like still think of them when they happen. Like, you know, what can I use for examples? Like, you know, the shower scene in Psycho, or or just like the pea soup scene in The Exorcist. I mean, just throwing random stuff out. There are moments in this film that are just like so messed up, but so chilling that I'm still thinking about this movie today. And I'm not going to lie, like if this movie ended up being released this year, I know it's coming out, I think, February next year, and I can't wait to see it again. This film would definitely be my number one film of the year. It is fantastic, and it's one I highly recommend both of you and also our listeners to check out, because pretty much everything you've heard about this film is true. It is terrific, and we'll have to do a podcast on it as well when it does, because there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about the film, but I don't want to mention it because it does go into spoilers. So you just all have to go wait till another few months to see it. But I definitely look forward to checking it out again very soon. And yeah, I have other mentions as well, but I might save them we might do another one of these next year. For October, because like I said, I think it's always good to sort of like, you know, always kind of recommend horror films that a lot of people haven't seen to people, because that way it sort of like, you know, gives these sort of little known films more exposure, and also kind of makes sort of, you know, switches things up a bit. So you don't always have to watch, you know, like all the classics and all that every year. You can watch other different stuff because there's so much great stuff out there, and you just know to when to look. And I think we're doing a privilege to, in a way, to all of our listeners out there by suggesting these films to check out. And I hope all of our listeners check them out for sure. I know I will.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
To expand upon that just a little bit, on top of that, I mean, I know quite a few independent horror directors who their stuff, you're never going to see it like a store, on a store shelf or anything like that. It's just not going to happen. It's too hard to get into that nowadays, but that doesn't make any of their stuff any less. Like Run, for example, or well, The Shelter. But although I see big things coming for The Shelter, but it just gives them exposure because a lot of them are making movies for next to nothing, but doing their best because that's what they love the most in the world, and anything I can do. I mean, hell, the website I write for, From Dusk Till Con.com, one of the biggest things about us is that's what we do. We love to promote independent horror and get their names out there, the directors, the actors, the writers, all of that, just so that other people can see the brilliance for themselves.
Exactly. I think I can't sum it up any better than that, James, that's for sure. And yeah, I guess that could be a wrap on this episode of Super Podcast. Like I said, I hope all of our listeners out there go out and check these films. Like, even based on both your suggestions, B and James, like, I'm definitely going to be checking out those ones you've mentioned for sure. Because, like, for some of them, I've never even heard of before. And it's always a thrill when you hear about a horror film that you've never heard of before. And once you sort of, and once you hear it and know a bit more about it, it just makes me even more intrigued to check it out. But before we wrap up, B, where can people find you on the internet this week?
Okay, so as per usual, you can find me on supermarcy.com doing my thing. On Twitter, I am known as Da Boomcat. That is DA_boom, and that's K for combat. So
Mortal Kombat!
Get over here! You can also find me on Wolf in a Gorilla Suit, run by my good friend Diego Valenzuela, and we've got some awesome, awesome content on there. You can also find me at morehorror.net, run by another good friend, Seth Matoya. James, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me co-hosting the Super Squared Circle podcast right here on supermarcy.com with Marcy herself.
That's right.
You can also find me at Rebellion Reborn on Twitter. And you can find me at From Dusk Till Con, that's two L's, .com, where I write for all sorts of independent horror and various horror-based lifestyle aspects, include everything from music to cooking to all sorts of things. And I wanted to bring up, starting tomorrow at 12 p.m. noon Eastern Standard Time, we are having a colossal Halloween blowout on our website. If you go to fromdusktillcon.com/radio, we have a video player there that's going to be playing 90 straight hours of the best independent horror films you can find, including Headless, American Guinea Pig, a 10-hour block from Fred Vogel's Toe Tag Pictures to kick it all off. And you can even find Time to Kill and Run playing there.
Awesome.
Run will be playing at, if you're in America, Sunday, November 1st at 7:03 p.m. And they'll be playing both cuts back-to-back. So the whole thing is free. You don't need to sign up or anything like that. It's ad-free, and it's just running because that's how we do shit.
Awesome. I'll try to check that out over the weekend, but with my move and everything, I probably won't be as much, but I'll try to once if I can, for sure.
I'll send you a reminder so you can at least see Run.
Okay, cool.
What's that be?
Oh, I'm definitely going to check this out.
It covers all sorts of types of indie horror. I mean, there's going to be a lot of sick shit on there, folks.
Awesome. You can find me pretty much putting on a Michael Myers mask and hunting Laurie Strode on a daily basis. But, you know, that's what I do in my personal life.
How the hell do you get to Illinois from Australia, man?
Hey, what can I say? I have my ways.
He does teleport in the movies, though.
And wait just a second. Was that you who was hanging around in my closet trying stuff on?
I will not confirm or deny that, but, you know. That's
why was it the tutu, though?
Michael Myers in a tutu. Now, that is a sight you can't unsee. But seriously, though.
Like a transvestite midget.
Yes, but you'd have to listen to the last episode of the podcast to hear that reference. But
that's what we call a callback.
Exactly. And also plug the last episode as well.
Damn right.
you can find me on my Twitter page at twitter.com/BeJamite, or my Facebook page at facebook.com/BeJamite, or my fan page at facebook.com/TerribleAussie. And also you can find my weekly writings at supermarcy.com. And I have a bunch of stuff up there at the moment. I've got my top 50 even more greatest shots in horror films, if everyone wants to check that out. And as well, just posted today is my latest bad movie tweet-a-thon horror themed edition, which I take on the 1999 crappy remake, The Haunting. So check those out. And also, I think that's what the ghost did in that movie a lot. Because he was like watching all this shit go down during the movie. He's like, ugh. Yeah,
literal shit.
But I hope all our listeners enjoyed this episode. And I hope all of our listeners have a great Halloween as well. It's only, at least at the time of this recording, it's like 2 days away. But I'll post it up the day before Halloween so you can all listen to it. And we hope you all have a great one. And we'll see you all later. See you, everyone. Bye.
Ta-ta-ta.
Later, folks.